Hello, welcome to The Lore You Know, a show where we chat with some amazing human beings who are storytellers, collectors, and folklorists as we discuss the history of, inspiration behind, and importance of recording and sharing regional tales. Today, I have Jesse Desmond with me, who has really awesome stories to share, and I'm very excited. Hi, Jesse.
Hi.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. I know we had some technical difficulties there at first, but I'm glad we got through them.
That's fine. See the technical difficulties, it was just an actual tech glitch, I think, for you, the way that was working. But I'm used to all of it being on my end because I live in the middle of nowhere and the internet.
I also live in the middle of nowhere.
So. Yes, that's true. Could you tell everybody where you're joining us from?
I live in Fairbanks, Alaska, and which is kind of in the center of the state of Alaska. We say that it takes 400 miles. So it takes 400 miles to get to Anchorage, takes 400 miles to get to the border, takes 400 miles.
Wow. Yeah.
I think it's a little less, but still close enough.
Yeah. 400 still. Awesome. So, of course, this is a Small Town Monsters podcast, and we talk about cryptids, paranormal, all the weird stuff, UFOs. Can you explain your background and your connection to that genre?
Sure. Like where I got my interest?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's just start from there.
My interest in everything started at a really young age. Right outside of Fairbanks is a small community called North Pole, and where there is a Santa Claus house, in case anyone has questions. It's a Christmas themed town. I kind of grew up kind of outside of North Pole. Between North Pole and Fairbanks is Fort Wainwright. So there's a lot of like outside of city limits, kind of residential areas. And on top of that, I always had to stay like really close around the house because there had been some serial killers in the state and kind of like in the area around the time that I was born. And so there was that kind of hysteria going on. Anyone wants to look it up, the guy's last name is Bunday. It's Bunday. And he's been featured on a number of different true crime shows and stuff like that. Yeah. Anyway, because that's pretty much in my backyard.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, you know, I was a little kid hanging out. And it kind of started with, I hear whispering outside, which sounds so stupid, but it's like you could hear a whisper, but you couldn't hear what was being said. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, you're in the trees, you know, we had a swing set out there and, you know, you're swinging or something and you stop because you hear like a kind of a sound. And, I don't know. I didn't know what it was. And I was just always like, oh, that's just the woods. You know, and then there was also like a crazy amount of, I always thought it was like construction sounds, like someone beating on a board with like a hammer, mm-hmm. kind of a sound. But it would go on even in the dead of winter. And since Fairbanks, we don't get a ton of snow, but we do get really cold temperatures. So at 40 below, you know, you're standing out there waiting for the bus to show up because it's Alaska and you still go outside at 40 below to wait for the bus. And, you know, and you hear like this weird knocking sound. And I just, you know, my little kid brain was like, wow, someone's doing construction. And I didn't realize that there was such a thing as wood knocking at that point. I didn't find out till I was more of an adult, about wood knocks. So, growing up, our house, we had a ghost cat, and which sounds kind of dumb, but you would feel it like walk on you. And the thing is, my sister had a cat. And so we'd be like, oh, it's just, you know, it's just a cat. And you reach down and there's nothing there, you know? Mm-hmm. So we had this ghost cat, and so I was used to that, and I wasn't scared of that at all. But we also had some shadow people around our property. So I don't know what was going on, but this was like the zone for me, I guess. And I had like this Head and Shoulders kind of shadow person that would come out and like watch me. Like, I don't know. I was terrified as a kid. I was terrified of being in the dark for a long time. And I still get a little, I can still creep myself out, you know, if I get too much in my head. But, you know, and a lot of times what that ended up turning into was, instead of seeing people, after I moved away from that house, I stopped seeing people so much. I started seeing shadow animals. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't hear a lot about shadow animals, but it was like, you know, you see like a dogs or something. Or one time at work, when I was living in Portland, I could have sworn like a bird swooped down at my head, and like my coworker was like, what are you doing? Because I dropped to the floor. It was like, I thought I was being dive bombed by a black bird or something. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think I've moved enough that they haven't found me or something. That's what I tell myself. I don't know why these things are around, but I do know that sometimes there are ties to like that whispering sound. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's kind of what got me interested initially. And I've had some UFO sightings. And I've never once seen Bigfoot. I would really like to see Bigfoot. I'd probably be really scared, but I'd really like to see Bigfoot. I don't know. I'm interested in other things too, like vampires, you know, and some of those kind of creatures that kind of get written off for the most part, mm-hmm. Just because they have such a long history. And I should probably state that one of my degrees is like a bachelor's of history. So I look at this long history of vampire lore and stuff. And I think it's fascinating. We even have vampire lore up here in Alaska.
Really? Like,
yeah, Native vampire lore.
What? Can you go into that a little bit?
Sure. So, okay. So I don't know how familiar people are with the Native groups up here. So I'll just say along the northern coast region, they have something that they call the Angiak. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like someone who's been left to die or presumed dead or something, and they come back and they kind of feast on their family, and they have like this bloated kind of look, and if they aren't dealt with, then they'll go through the whole village and like kill people off that way. And it really reminds me of kind of like the Eastern European vampires, you know, because they had more of a bloated appearance and stuff like that. I just think it's kind of interesting.
How do they deal with them? You know?
I don't know. I think they just kind of...
Yeah.
I have no idea. Probably decapitation or something.
Yeah.
That part doesn't get talked about. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I live in a kind of a unique place because a lot of the Native cultures and stuff up here, they have stories, but a lot of them don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, and if they do, then it's very limited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. When you mentioned the shadow animals, which is super interesting, you mentioned the bird. What other animals did you see? And you mentioned that was in Portland, so I'm assuming that you saw them elsewhere as well.
I've seen kind of like large dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Like at least I've always had like medium-sized dogs, like Labradors. Yeah. And I would say that the shadow dogs that I've seen are a little bigger than a lab, and they almost look wolf-like because they have like more pointed ears. And since I've always had labs, like my dogs don't have that. I've seen cats. I've seen rats. At one point in Portland, I thought a rat had run in from outside.
Mm-hmm.
And ran under like the computer table, but I never did find anything. And birds. I mean, I've seen a couple shadow people as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like they were just watching, and they were never aggressive, but they're right. Just like watching. And so I don't know. I've always been like, when are they going to show up again? Because it's like it takes them a while to figure out where I am, and then I start seeing them again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the whispering when you were outside. Did the whispering, would it happen like as if somebody was close to your ear, or did it sound like they were like in the trees, far away, muffled sounds? I mean,
I was kind of like in the middle of, we had like some trees along the side of our property. Mm-hmm. And so like the swing set and the sandbox and stuff were kind of in the center around, like there's trees all around and stuff. And yeah. So it just sounded like it was coming from the trees. And I don't,
because
sometimes it'd sound close and sometimes it was like a little more distant, like there was more than one. And I don't know. I was just always hoping to see a fairy or something.
Yeah, of course.
So that never happened.
Did you ever talk to your parents about it?
Not really. I kind of like, I was pretty aware that of how it would seem if I talked to people about it, you know?
Right. Right.
I don't know. I guess if I was going to talk about it, I'd probably talk about it to my mom. She's a little more open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. She always said I was like an old soul. So that's a whole other thing. Life regression and all that. That's a whole other thing. Anyway, I have seen a number of like UFOs around mm-hmm. here. Let's see here. And I've had UFO sightings that other people in the community have also seen. So it's kind of nice to have that verification.
Oh yeah.
So in Alaska, we have two types of triangle crafts. We have, you know, your standard TR-3B, you know, which is like your equilateral triangle has a center dot underneath, and then there's like a dot in each corner, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And people have gotten photos of that. We also have like this elongated, completely black triangle, and it's the what I could equate it to was like the Star Destroyer from Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was just like this really long thing, but it moved really slow. There was absolutely no lights on it, so in Alaska. You might be going to school with someone who lives 30 miles out of town,
mm-hmm.
right? So I had some friends who lived 30 miles out of town, and my mom picked me up one night. We're driving back, and I'm looking out, and there's like this big valley because they live out in the hills. And there's this big valley below, And that's where I first saw this thing. And it was just moving real slow. And I almost didn't see it, except it passed by like this really wispy cloud. And the moon was out, and I just noticed it moving against that, because it's almost like it was absorbing the lights or something. There was almost no reflection off of it, but it blocked part of that cloud. And then I noticed it, you know, then I knew where to look for it. And other people in that area in the hills, they had seen it. So that's kind of a new one. I haven't heard of anyone else really talking about an elongated triangle.
Right, right. So when you went back to school then, some of your friends had mentioned that they saw that as well?
No, people that my dad worked with.
Oh, people that your dad worked with.
So, like, yeah, full-fledged adults at that point.
Right,
not,
right.
Not some high schooler. At the, you know. I say that. This was like back in like the late 90s. So, because I am almost 41 at this point.
So then this is one thing that, I don't know how often people talk about a lot of strangeness that happens up in Alaska, but there are a ton of UFO sightings up there, correct?
Yeah. On Facebook, I run, the Alaska UFOs Facebook group, and it's primarily for locals to share sightings and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it comes in waves. You know, sometimes there's nothing for a couple months, and then all of a sudden there's just left and right UFO sightings.
Does that seem to correspond with any, like, I'm thinking you guys go through the different phases of light where you might have days of, you know, you have a midnight sun, and then other times of the year it's completely dark. Does that seem to affect anything as far as sightings go?
More people notice lights at night in the dark. That's what I've noticed. There's actually there's fewer sightings in the summer, usually, mm-hmm. even though more people are out hiking and camping and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like a visual contrast sort of issue. It's easier to see, you know, a light in the dark as right. opposed to light on a, you know, the midnight sun sky or like this summer, it's been kind of rainy for mm-hmm. a good portion of it. And that's the other thing. In the winter, we also get a lot of overcast. So it's
right. That would make it hard.
Sometimes that blocks things, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people tourists are always asking, where can I go to see the Northern Lights? And it's like, all you have to do is like step outside, but it has to be dark and it has to be, cloud free.
Right.
Those are your two requirements, kind of dark and cloud free.
Oh,
so, cause they're starting to come out now, and it's still kind of lightish at night.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I haven't seen yet, but I want to. When we were up in Alaska, which anyone that's familiar with our films will recognize Jesse from On the Trail of Bigfoot, Land of Missing. But while we were up there filming, I was so hopeful. But by the time we got there, I think it was only the first few nights did it actually get dark. And then after that, it was just light the rest of the time. So
yeah,
very quickly. My hopes were dashed to see the Northern Lights. But I fall into that category of tourists asking, when can I see them?
Well, we also have something called STEVE. And I forgot the acronym stands for. But it's a fake, like Northern Lights creation. And it's a simulated ionosphere or something. That HARP can produce. And it's like this reddish pinkish color, and they refer to it as Steve.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And that, where can you can just see that anywhere, or
They have people in there testing for it, and they're out of Gakona. So I don't know if you have to be right at Gakona or if that's some, because I've seen some pinkish stuff in the sky before. So I don't know if that's them creating it or I don't know. I don't know if you have to be right there just for Steve or if it kind of goes all over the place.
That's pretty cool. okay. So talking about where you grew up and having people as far as like 30 miles outside of town, which that's, so you get a decent mix of people, I would assume, as far as like what you were raised around. Were you raised around storytellers at all? People that would share stories?
There's a fairly decent amount of storytelling going on. The biggest problem is the interesting stories like Bigfoot and all that. If you're asking like native people from around here, a lot of them are pretty tight-lipped. They think that if they mention it at all, then it'll come like that's a way to attract that kind of thing. And so that goes for anything and everything. So we have Bigfoot stories. We have stories of giants. We have stories of little people. We have all kinds of weird monster creatures in the local mythos. I don't know. I even had a hard time getting people to talk to me, and I'm part Athabascan, and I think I just look too white. is what it is. If I looked a little more native, then I think they'd be a little more open. And a lot of times you have to like visit places multiple times, like over and over, so people get used to your face. And then they're a little more inclined to talk to you about stuff. And here I am just like a introverted city person trying to get stories out of people. And one of my skills is being able to find other people who can really get others to open up. Like I find like that third party who can get the other people to talk. And I'm really not great at it. That's I think I write better than I speak. How about that?
Yeah, I understand that for sure. Yeah. I definitely, as a writer, I get that. So like of the stories that you've gotten, whether yourself or through the third party, what stories are like definitively Alaska? Like, obviously, Bigfoot, as we've covered in some of our work, has a different, somewhat different behavioral patterns in Alaska versus like the lower 48, but Bigfoot is still in the lower 48 as far as that goes. Is there anything up there that you could say, this is ours, nowhere else?
Yeah. Okay. So if people have paid attention to all the stuff you guys have been filming in Alaska, my core group of Bigfoot field investigators that I work with, from around the state, there's Hailey Worley, Michael Thompson, Larry Beans Baxter, and Norm Solly. And, sometimes we go out on group, expeditions. And at one point we went out to, the Denali Highway, and which is kind of an unpaved highway for the most part. You can pass right by Mount Hayes, right? And so we were out camping and stuff, and we stopped at a few different lodges and asked questions about Bigfoot. And we got some interesting stuff. So, okay, so let me back up and just say Mount Hayes, for anyone who doesn't know, so in the 70s, the CIA was working with the Stanford Research Institute for remote viewing projects. And this guy named Pat Price, who had a really good like accuracy rating for his remote viewing, did some unofficial remote viewing stuff at his house and came in and kind of said, hey, here's a bunch of papers of stuff that I remote viewed over the last weekend or whatever. You know, there's one of those things happened to be a government alien base kind of inside of Mount Hayes, Alaska. Okay. And the military base that's right outside of Mount Hayes would be Fort Greely. And that's the location of our missile defense system. So, and that's like a really huge missile defense system for Alaska. Mm-hmm. And so the theory is that there's like some sort of correlation between those two. Anyway, so we went out and we're asking questions, and people are telling us that they were out. Okay, you can't drive to Mount Hayes, but you can like take a helicopter if you're doing like heli-skiing or something. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you can get out there in a few different ways. And some people were saying that they took some snow machines out there, and they stopped for like a cigarette break, and they saw like these army guys with a with a couple of different Sasquatches that were chained together, and they were dragging like moose, like a couple moose, and they were going inside, like inside some opening of Mount Hayes.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, what? Like, that is probably the craziest story. But there's also, people have also seen like exhaust smoke, you know, like some kind of machine smoke coming out of Mount Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
There's been things seen flying into Mount Hayes with no explosions, you know, like
right.
And that sort of thing. So there's been a lot of weird sightings out there. And then recently, Fort Greely is like butt up against a place called Delta Junction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a junction in the highway. It's very agricultural kind of community. There's a herd of bison out there, and they found three cattle in 2 weeks that had been mutilated. And that was last year in August. Oh. So, and that, let me whip around here. That made it into my book.
I have that. I've got that book.
With pictures. There's pictures in there.
Cattle mutilations, is that something that is very common up in Alaska?
No, but I mean, we have quite a few cattle ranches and stuff around the state, but we don't see a lot of cattle mutilations. We do have other type of mysterious animal deaths and mysterious animals. I don't know, like that someone said that there was a person from MUFON who rode into the division of fish and wildlife and said, hey, what is this I hear about a cow being found under the ice, like off the Arctic coast of Alaska? So I couldn't find anything about that.
Interesting.
I don't, but that's kind of a weird thing to a cow to be under the ice, unless they were referring to like a cow walrus or something. Is that what a
right.
walrus is? I don't know.
Right.
We've had a lot of strange like caribou deaths. In the 70s, there was a group of grad students who were out doing a really long hike, around Eagle, which is kind of along the Canadian border. And they, one morning, one of them got up early to go to the bathroom and looked up, and there's UFOs in the sky, and he saw one raise up from the valley below because they were camped out on a ridge. So he woke the others up, and they decided to go down to that valley to see what the UFO was doing down there. And they found like a swoosh in like a meadow area with like some imprints in the ground. Mm-hmm. And the imprints were triangular shaped. And they found some moose that had been mutilated. There was a adult and baby grizzly bears. And there was some caribou. They mentioned elk outside of moose and caribou, and which that's kind of weird because we don't have elk here in Alaska. We have some deer, but you have to be in more of the southern regions for that. So not in the interior region. And then there was also supposed to be like a young whale carcass. And then this is also, if you were to directly go from Eagle to the ocean, I think it was like 408 miles, but you have a lot of mountains and stuff in the way. So if someone was to drive and throw a whale carcass onto the land, like where they were, they would have had to have gone over 400 miles on a highway system with a whale.
Right.
That's kind of weird. And then they found like these kind of some weird rocks, and they tried to collect them. One of the grad students was, he was attending Columbia University. Mm-hmm. And so he was going to take it back and, you know, study these weird rock things. And it just happened to be lost at the airport, you know? Like, there's just some weird things up here, I guess. Like, just some weird things.
Just a few.
Yeah. So I don't know how accurate that one story is, because I found it in an old UFO magazine. But that's where a lot of people would report their stuff. You know, they'd report it to those magazines because those were the people who are interested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where they wouldn't stand out as being like a freak or something.
Right. Yeah. I found some really amazing stories in some, they're defunct now, but UFO newsletters from this area, people just writing stuff in, sometimes anonymously, but usually, I don't know, the circulation wasn't huge on those. So it was pretty safe.
Yeah.
It occurred to me after seeing you hold up your book that the people that are listening and not watching would not know what you were doing. So can you please tell us about your book?
Okay. So my book, I'll put it right here in case people who are watching want to take a look at it.
Yeah.
It's called Saucers of the North. It's a history of UFOs in Alaskan airspace. You can find it on Amazon. It came out August 2022. Mm-hmm. I went through a lot of FOIA documents and newspaper clippings and I don't know. It was like a huge pile of research. So I'm pretty proud of it.
yeah. What's some of the earliest sightings that you came across?
Let's see. I want to say 1909 was the earliest potential sighting.
Nice.
I just have to take a look real quick.
Well, you're fine.
To make sure I have the correct date. Yeah, 1909, December 31st, 1909. And I even included a copy of the news article.
Nice.
There we go, right there.
Light seen on mountainside.
Yeah. So this happened at Skagway. And basically these people were like, hey, there's some weird lights on that, on the side of the mountain there. And people were like, I'm not going to investigate that, because they were like, oh, we see it. Okay. You know, but at the same time, it's December 31st. It's probably really cold. There's a lot of snow down there. They just get dumped on, in the winter. And so I can totally understand them not wanting to go up this mountain to try and investigate.
Especially in 1909.
Yeah.
Like, what do they have to get up the mountain so easily? Not as much as we have now.
Yeah, there might not even have been roads up there, up onto that particular mountain.
Yeah.
So they're just like, yeah, maybe it's like a miner or something, or someone just walking around. It's like right on the side of a mountain. And I want to say it was like at 10 at night or something.
Did it say light or lights?
A mysterious light.
A mysterious light. Okay.
Oh, and it was between 6 and 7 p.m. Okay. So at 6 and 7 p.m., it's dark, especially that time of year.
Yeah.
Because December 21st is the complete opposite of June 21st, which is our longest day. So December 21st is our longest night of the year. If you are familiar with that 30 Days of Night movie, then think of that. They get a little bit more light down around Skagway than they do up in Barrow. So there's probably about a solid 6 hours of daylight around that time of the year.
Wow.
Yeah. So they said, oh, it's probably a light from a hunter or a wood chopper.
Mm-hmm. Probably. It's probably all it was.
You know, and I'm sitting here thinking, I've lived up here my whole life. You know, I was born and raised here.
Yeah.
And December 31st can be pretty brutal, temperature-wise.
Yes.
So, and I know it's a little warmer down there around Skagway and stuff, but because it's a little further south than where I'm at. But still, I mean, it could be like negative 30 or something for sure. Like,
yeah,
very realistically.
Yeah, that definitely doesn't sound super feasible that it was just one dude wandering around up there with a light.
How big would that light have to be on the outside, you know, like,
right.
I have a lot of questions about it, but
right.
It was an interesting find for sure.
Yeah. What, do you have another favorite from the book that made it in?
I do have one in here. I have to like locate it. I don't know where I put it in here. It's,
oh, no,
I always think it's older than it is. And I know it's not.
Was it something you came across like in a newspaper article or one of those newsletters or?
I think I found it on New Fork, on the New Fork website or something. And it's, who cares? I'll give you guys the gist.
Yeah.
So, there was this. Okay. Are you familiar with The Deadliest Catch?
Yes.
TV show. Okay.
Yeah.
So this kind of happened over in like the Dutch Harbor region, and which has like the crazy deadliest catch waters. Right. And a lot of the fishermen, they kind of go out early in the morning, which that's pretty typical for commercial fishermen. Mm-hmm. And these people on this boat, they saw this thing in the distance, and it was just like this huge mothership, and it was like 300 feet long or something, and it was about, I think they said it was about 50 feet off the water.
Oh wow.
And it just slowly moved like right by their ship, and it just slowly moved. And the person who made the report was like, yeah, it was pretty silent. It just moved right by us. I want to say that there was like some electronic disturbances, like some of the lights went out or something. And I want to say it happened recently, like in the early 2000s. And that's what throws me off. Like my brain automatically thinks go back further, but right. I want to say that it was something a little more recent. But we have a lot of mothership sightings up here, where there's like these massive UFOs, and everyone's like, oh, they were at least 2 or 3 football field lengths long, or you know, they try and give some sort of reference to something.
Yeah,
and they're just huge. So the Glenn Highway is pretty well known for a lot of huge UFO sightings. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have the JAL 1628 sighting from November 17th, 1986. Mm-hmm. So that was like the Japanese airline UFO incident. And mm-hmm. they had 2 smaller UFOs, which were still fairly big. And I believe that they said that those were rectangular in shape, oddly enough. And then those moved around their 747 cargo plane and then like zoomed off, and they passed over Fairbanks, and then they got just past Fairbanks. They just passed by Murphy Dome and did like a weird loop-de-loop, like evasive maneuvers, because there was like this gigantic, like walnut shaped UFO that was trailing them. And of course, like Philip J. Class. Is that right? Whatever. I shouldn't know his name by now. I see it so much. And I just shake my head every time I see that name, because he's so into UFO research. But he was like, oh, they probably just saw Jupiter. And it's like, okay. Mm-hmm. That's not the size of a couple, like 2 or 3 like airplane carriers. Like I think it was like,
right.
I think it was like 2 or 3 airline carriers long. And the pilot, I mean, there's only 3 people on board. The pilot had been, he had been a jet pilot for the Japanese Air Force.
Yeah.
For a long time. So he had at least 10,000 hours under his belt, which is.
There's credibility there.
Yeah. And people just treat it like some kind of joke. You know, he probably has an idea of what a distant planet might look like while he's flying. And it probably just looks like a dot in the sky. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So, I hate it when people say that kind of thing. Just.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, understandable. So there is a question that's been on my mind since you started this interview with me, and it has to do with being raised in an area where there was a serial killer active. It has nothing to do with cryptids, but or UFOs or anything, but I'm just personally curious, like, how does that, you know, did you have like a plan? Were you taught like, okay, if you see this person, I'm not familiar with this case. So did they even know what he looked like?
He was a tech sergeant at Eielson Air Force Base.
Okay.
Sorry, I need some water.
Oh, you're fine.
He ended up killing, I want to say like 6 or 7 women or something in the area. Mm-hmm. And that includes one girl, like one little kid, he abducted her while she was riding her bike with like her older brother. So that right there just like freaked a lot of parents out.
Oh yeah, of course.
And I want to say that all this went on in like 80, 81. And I wasn't born until 82, but it still was recent enough that it was like in my parents' memory, you know? So they were just like, oh, you can't leave the yard unless we're with you. And we have to know where you're going. And I don't know. I guess when I was a little kid, there was, you know, a case of like a high school girl who went missing. Some bad things happened and they found her in the spring under the ice in the water, you know, that sort of thing. And so then it was like reinforced again. And there was a girl who my sister was friends with, like one street down, and some dude on a snow machine tried to grab her one winter, and she squirmed and got away. And like,
wow,
you know, it's just crazy. I don't understand that kind of stuff, but I'm totally a true crime person. So I'm always like fascinated with all this stuff. And I don't know. I just like, I guess it's just like, why?
Right.
Like I have questions and it's just interesting.
Yeah, it is. Okay. Well, thanks for talking about that, even though it was way off topic. So at the end of every episode, I ask my guests to tell me a story of some sort. So I'm wondering if you have a story that you could share that maybe, if you have one in mind already, that's awesome. If not, maybe a story of like a cryptid that is specifically Alaska.
Okay. I should have been a little more prepared.
Oh, you're fine.
But, oh gosh.
This is what editing's for anyway.
let's see. I mean, there's so many different topics. All right. Okay. I'll give you some stuff about the little people, because a lot of people, you know, all right. So I put on like the Boreal Bigfoot Expo, with my Bigfoot investigator crew. And, I don't know, it seems like everyone wants to talk about Bigfoot or UFOs or something.
Right.
So, there's a bunch of different names for like native names for the little people. I don't know them all. It's just, if you just say the little people, everyone knows what you're talking about. They're supposed to be about 3 feet tall, and they're super strong and they're super fast. And pilots claim to have seen them like running across the tundra with like one can carry a caribou on its back. Whoa. So caribou are kind of, they're not, I don't think they're technically deer. I think they're related to a deer, but I don't think they're deer. But they have specially formed hooves to maneuver over the tundra and stuff. Anyway, and they travel in huge herds.
Yeah.
And so these little people, they're said to live in the hills and in the mountains and stuff. I mean, it's very much like what you hear in other regional folklore about little people and, you know, dwarves and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And the little people that are in Alaska will, they'll take things that they would find useful, like knives. Sometimes they'll take things that start fire, whether it's matches or lighters or whatever. But people have been out hunting, and I've heard stories of hunters, you know, they're, I don't know, 2 or 3 days into like their hike, and it's very remote, and they find like bare, like tiny barefoot footprints, you know, in like the bank around a creek or something like that. And it looks like a child's footprint, you know, for the general size. And then their hunting knife will be missing the next day or something after they make camp. There was one guy, he was out moose hunting with a friend just outside of Delta Junction. And there's like, I think they're like 5 gallon rectangular jugs of water that you can buy. And they had a couple of those. And those had been moved about 100 feet from their tents, like together. They'd been picked up and moved because they had set up their camp, and then they went out to go see if they could track a moose in that area. Mm-hmm. And things had been rifled through, but there weren't any claw marks like you might expect with a bear. Like things,
right?
Things had been like unlatched and opened, the water jugs moved, you know, just weird things like that. And they blame the little people for it, you know, just kind of messing with them. So we have a bunch of those kind of stories. There's been some news outlets from like, I want to say Barrow or Prudhoe or something like that up north, where like a village woke up and there's like all these snowballs all over the village, and they have photos of it. And then the villagers are like, this is the result of the little people pranking us. Like this is something that they would do.
Right.
And it's just all over the state. We have little people stories. I've never seen one myself. And it makes me wonder, like, were they the ones whispering to me as a little kid or something? I don't know. I feel like my biggest flaw is I hear all these stories, but I haven't seen everything. And I wish it was my story.
Right.
But it's not.
Not yet.
Yeah. I've had ghosts and UFOs and shadow people, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, well, that's more than some people is. There's still hope. There's still hope, Jess. Oh well, thank you for coming on here. Can you tell everybody where they can find you? Again, re-hit the where they can get your book and everything else.
Sure. All my books, you can find them on Amazon. If you just type in my name, I spell it with an IE at the end, Jesse with an IE. You can also go to jessedesmond.com, and that's my author website. You can also search for me on Facebook, and I'm pretty easy to find on Facebook. I guess you can also search for me on Twitter and Instagram and all that kind of stuff too.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you.
Yeah,
I'm so glad you came. And if anybody wants to, obviously you guys should rate and review the podcast. You can leave comments below if you're watching this on Squad. You can send me an email, heather@smalltownmonsters.com. And I guess that's it. Until next time.
The Lore You Know is presented by the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. You can find out more about this and other network shows, as well as Small Town Monsters films, books, our upcoming Kickstarter campaign, and much more at smalltownmonsters.com. If you enjoyed this show, consider giving it a like, rating, review, or sharing it with a friend. And be sure to tune in next time for another episode of The Lore You Know.